It's time to reclaim America for free thought. Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, www.ffrf.org, with your hosts, FFRF co-presidents Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor, with irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Hello, all you infidels, heretics, and happy heathens. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio, an hour devoted to slightly irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is an hour free from religion. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is a non-faith-based initiative.
Today we're very pleased that we'll be talking with Rita Swan, founder of CHILD, which stands for Children's Healthcare is a Legal Duty, headquartered out of Iowa. Rita will be talking about the tragic loss of her own baby, whom she turned over to the care of Christian Science practitioners, and how that tragedy turned her into an activist fighting for religious exemptions, to repeal religious exemptions, which our government grants parents. And even today, children die from curable ailments. So stay tuned.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Dan Barker with co-host Annie Laurie Gaylor. And we have on the phone today Rita Swan. Rita Swan is the president of Children's Healthcare is a Legal Duty. And you can spell that out as C-H-I-L-D. Children's Healthcare is a Legal Duty. It's a national membership organization that's working to stop child abuse and neglect, which is related to religious beliefs, related to cultural traditions, and to health quackery. Rita has published articles in the New England Journal of Medicine, Pediatrics, Advances in Pediatrics, Free Inquiry, Free Thought Today, the Encyclopedia of Domestic Violence, Los Angeles Times, the Quinnipiac Health Law Journal, and many other publications. She has testified before legislatures in 14 states, before a U.S. Senate staff briefing, and before the United States Advisory Board on Child Abuse and Neglect. Are you there, Rita?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
We have been following the wonderful, I guess that's the right word for such a grim topic, but the wonderful work you are doing trying to protect the lives of children through your organization and through your personal efforts, mainly because of the exemptions that many states have to let religious people off the hook when they allow their children to suffer or to die because of health problems. Can you tell us how you got involved in that issue?
Yes. Doug and I, my husband and I, were lifelong Christian Scientists until 1977, when our baby son became very seriously ill, and we relied on the Christian Science faith healers for 12 days during his very serious illness to heal him, and they repeatedly told us that they were the experts and that our fears were a detriment to them, and we should just get out of their way and let them heal the baby, and demanded that we deny the symptoms, the seriousness of the symptoms, because with faith healing, you have to believe that God is on your side and that the prayers and the rituals are working, or else they won't work, of course. So it's very demanding, and the Christian Science practitioners would accuse us of too much fear and lack of gratitude and different moral shortcomings as the cause of our baby's illness.
And your son Matthew had spinal meningitis?
Yes, we eventually learned that. On the 12th day, the Christian Science healer suggested he might have a broken bone and that Christian Scientists were allowed to go to a doctor for setting of broken bones. So we immediately raced to the emergency room of the nearest hospital, and there the disease was diagnosed as meningitis. We had thought that she would continue to pray for Matthew if we went to the hospital with the broken bone story. The Christian Science Church has a rule that the faith healers cannot give you their prayer treatments if you voluntarily go to a doctor, unless it's for the exceptions that the founder, Mary Baker Eddy, decided were convenient for herself. And broken bones is one of them.
And is eyeglasses something like that one
mm-hmm.
of the others?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And teeth. She was caught by the Boston Press getting her teeth extracted by a dentist and even using the latest anesthetic. So she changed the rules and wrote that it was okay for Christian Scientists to go to dentists.
It's too bad she didn't have spinal meningitis.
Yes, but, it is.
So then what happened?
The doctors wanted to do emergency surgery to relieve the swelling in the brain, and the Christian Science practitioner, when she found out what we had done, she was very angry and said that she hadn't told us to do that, and that we could have just taken him to an X-ray clinic and not told them about the fever and all these other symptoms. And she refused to pray for him anymore. So we went ahead with the surgery, and he lived for a week in intensive care and then died.
And this was in 1977.
Right. And we never went back to a Christian Science Church service after that, and asked for our membership to be withdrawn. And within a year, we decided that this was a public policy issue and we wanted to speak out about it. And eventually we found media that were willing to give us a platform.
So were you or the practitioner culpable in any way for what happened under the law?
In Michigan, where our son died, there was a religious exemption in the civil code that the Christian Science Church used to tell its members that they had a carte blanche. But if prosecutors had really been determined, they could have filed criminal charges against us because there was no religious exemption in the criminal code. But the hospital personnel were very compassionate toward us, and they did not report it.
And you actually did, you know, finally seek care.
Right.
I noticed on your website that you point out that the form of meningitis that Matthew had is nearly 100% fatal without antibiotic treatment and 95% curable with antibiotics, and it's one of the forms of meningitis that you can get a vaccine for today.
Right, right. We're so happy about that vaccine. It was developed after we lost our son, but it has reduced the incidence of meningitis by over 90%, which is
that's
wonderful.
Bacterial, right?
Right.
So how, I mean, you must have been in a state of shock. How long did it take you before you formed Child?
We formed Child in 1983, so that was 6 years later. In 1979, we were on the Phil Donahue program, and we received 600 letters from that, and many people urged us to found an organization.
Now, earlier you referred to them as faith healers. Exactly what is a practitioner? Can they be a faith healer if they don't believe the person is actually sick?
Well, they don't like the word faith, and they call themselves practitioners. Their methods of healing are only prayer. They call their prayers treatments, and the treatments are like a subset of prayer. All treatment is prayer, but not all prayer is treatment. And the treatments they send bills for, and they have gotten several insurance companies to reimburse the bills for these prayers. They use medical terminology for their methods, calling the people that they pray for their patients and calling their prayers treatments. And they've gotten quite a bit of recognition with the third-party payers in, among several insurance companies. And they have permission to sign sick leave and disability statements for people to qualify for that funding. But they have no medical training. They can't make a diagnosis. And they've healed disease. They purport to heal the disease by convincing themselves and the patients that the disease is unreal.
Now, isn't it true that the Christian Scientists are the ones who lobbied to change many state laws way back to allow religious exemptions?
Mm-hmm. Yes. The federal government has admitted to us that the Christian Science Church was the only entity that lobbied for a regulation requiring states to enact religious exemptions to child neglect if they wanted to get federal funding for child abuse and neglect prevention.
And what is the status of that? How many states have exemptions like this, approximately?
Yeah.
Is it most?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the reasoning is that the parents are actually claiming that they are not neglecting their children because they are providing them with treatment. They are giving them an alternative religious treatment, which I think you've referred to as a form of quackery, though.
Well, it has no credible data to indicate that it heals disease. So,
and plenty of data that, in fact, it does not work. Right?
Exactly.
So we have to take a break here.
And we'll be right back to talk more about some of the other religions that are benefiting from these religious exemptions and what toll it's taking on the lives of children.
Beware of dogma. It has a bite. Beware of dogma. It wants a fight. Beware of dogma. It will ignite a holy war by itself. Beware of dogma. It'll trap your mind. Religious dogma. It'll make you blind. Beware of dogma. It's not designed to let you think for yourself.
This is Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio, here with Dan Barker, and we have on the phone with us from Iowa, Rita Swan, who's the director of Children's Healthcare is a Legal Duty. And we just heard Rita describe what happened to her own baby when they followed Christian practitioner advice about praying instead of getting medical care. Rita, I think there's a formal paper by some doctors giving some estimates about how many children have died from lack of medical care due to religion.
Well, the study was published in Pediatrics in 1998. The lead author was a pediatrician, Dr. Seth Asser, and I was the co-author of it. We reviewed 172 deaths of children after medical care was withheld on religious grounds. These were all U.S. children who died between 1975 and 1995. And we found that over 140 of these children would have had at least a 90% likelihood of survival with medical care.
And I know you track these cases very diligently in Child's newsletter.
Well, yes, we report them if they come to our attention, mm-hmm. but there is absolutely no methodical way of learning about these deaths. It's purely fortuitous when we learn about them. And, you know, one of the most astonishing things is that after our study was published, we learned about the Followers of Christ sect near Oregon City, Oregon, and they had lost 78 children in one congregation.
What was the name of that denomination?
Followers of Christ.
Followers of Christ is some independent group?
Yes.
How many children?
They had lost 78 children in their Oregon congregation and 12 children in their Idaho congregation.
So these children are dying of things like strep throat that's not treated? Or
Infectious diseases and diabetes and the deaths from unattended home deliveries. Because they don't believe in having any medical attention at childbirth.
Well, because the Bible very clearly says the prayer of faith will heal the sick, and they were taking the Bible literally.
Yes.
Now, speaking of diabetes, I know one of the cases that got a lot of attention and that you did track was Amy Hermanson, the little girl in Sarasota, Florida, who died at age 7 in 1986 of untreated diabetes, and that was a particular, I mean, there all these deaths are very hard to read about, but it was such a sad case, the way they treated her. I mean, they basically gave her no comfort or care. Because they, were they Christian Science?
Yes.
Because Christian Science regards regards illness as not really being true.
Right, an illusion. And so, you have to look away from the symptoms and in order to get a healing. You have to deny that there is a disease, because Christian Science logic is that God made everything good, and God is the only power, and so evil, broadly defined, is unreal, and evil includes traffic jams and war and poverty and divorce and accidents and disease, and you have to, you know, you not only have to believe that all those things are unreal because God is the only power and God is only good, but you have to persuade yourself that you don't have a mind separate from God that can even think those things are real or see them.
So if you have a child telling a parent, I have a sore throat, I don't feel well, my stomach hurts.
You go to school anyway.
That child, the parent, if they're going to be a good Christian Scientist, is supposed to basically ignore the child, right?
Well, you're supposed to tell the child that God is good and God didn't make the illness, and they have the God-given right to be free of that disease, and that if they just go about their normal activities and be happy and confident in their God-given freedom, they will be.
And there was another tragic case, I recall. Robin Twitchell was the 2-year-old who died near Boston in 1986. His parents were Christian Science, and he had peritonitis and a twisted bowel. So that was a really awful case.
Really horrible. 5 days of excruciating pain, and the last day of his life, he was vomiting up his own feces. And this Christian Science nurse, they have these people called nurses who are not state licensed and don't have medical training. The Christian Science nurse was force feeding this baby.
Oh.
And it was horrible, and yet the Christian Science practitioner testified at the trial that she had healed Robin, and he ran around happily chasing his kitty cat 15 minutes before he died.
They were found guilty in that case, weren't they?
They were.
And didn't the judge come out with that wonderful quote about parents are free to make martyrs of themselves for their own religion if they want, but they're not free to make martyrs of their children as a test of their own religious faith. Wasn't that his quote?
That's from the United States Supreme Court back in the 1940s.
Oh, okay. Well, he might have quoted that. Wow.
So what you have spent most of your lifetime doing is really trying not only to educate, but trying to repeal a lot of these state provisions and other policies that give succor to the Christian Science religion and others who would deny health care to children.
Yes.
And what's the status of that in this country today?
Well, it's certainly not what we would like. 48 states have religious exemptions from immunizations. Nearly all states have religious exemptions from metabolic testing of newborn babies. Several states have religious exemptions from prophylactic eye drops for newborns that prevent blindness. And then there are also the exemptions when the child is seriously ill. And those are more ambiguous. The exemptions from the preventive and diagnostic measures are ironclad and just a fact that those people are exempted from those. The exemptions from providing medical care when the child is seriously ill are ambiguous. They're confusing in many cases. And for a couple of decades anyway, there were many prosecutors who would find ways to work around those laws and file criminal charges anyway. There have been, I think, close to 60 criminal cases in which parents withheld life-saving medical care on religious grounds, and those prosecutions began in 1982 and have tapered off now. But there are some states where absolutely you have a carte blanche to withhold medical care from children, and some states where you really don't, but there are religious exemptions that these churches will tell their parents mean that their prayers have been recognized as a legal substitute for medical care. So it's a mix.
And aren't you working on a bill in your state of Iowa to give children equal rights to medical care?
Well, we certainly have been. We've been working on it since 1985. Mm-hmm. Iowa has a religious defense to manslaughter and felony child endangerment. Iowa is one of three states in the nation with a religious defense to manslaughter.
So you're living, you ended up in one of the states with some of the worst laws in the books, huh?
Yes, and we've tried so hard, and we've had bills introduced many times, but we have not succeeded. The legislators are a very reactive bunch, and they don't want to be proactive and look out for welfare of children in advance. And I tell them, well, we did have two children die in Iowa because of religious beliefs against medical care, but those cases were back in the 1980s, and they just tell me, you know, well, we have 1,000 children in Iowa every year who are molested by sex offenders, and I've got to think about that. And our response is, we're not asking for programs or funding or special services. We're just asking for equal protection in the law. You know, just have a law that says all parents have the same duty of care to get medical care when the child is seriously ill. And to me, it's discrimination in the law, very offensive to our American system, to have a law that actually says one group of children don't have the same protections for their life as other children.
From inept parents, basically. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you something before we go. You know, a lot of parents feel trapped in these religions, that they have to follow the creed. Mm-hmm. When your baby was finally taken to the hospital, did you feel relieved and glad about that? I mean, wouldn't you have wanted as a parent for someone to have just rushed in and done something, you know, so you wouldn't have to violate your religion yourself, but that your baby could be saved? I mean, aren't there parents that feel that way?
I know we felt that way. We would have been so relieved if there had been any outside voice, any neighbor even, who could have come in and said, wait a minute, this mm-hmm. baby is seriously ill. But instead, it was a secret, and this is Christian Science logic, too, is that to make a disease unreal, you don't tell people about it, you know. So only the practitioner and the parents knew when the child was sick.
So people could help if they knew of a situation like that by going to the authorities right away.
Yes, if they could go to Child Protection Services and report the case, probably Child Protection Services would try to intervene.
Rita, I wanted to ask you, in fighting to repeal Iowa's law or in fighting in other states, are you butting up against a major religious lobby? Or is it just that the legislators are afraid that they'll have a religious lobby?
The Christian Science Church is the only party that is registered against our bill this year, and they're a minuscule group of people. They have only 9 churches in the whole state of Iowa of 3 million people, and they won't tell their membership numbers, but we know those churches are tiny. In fact, there was a newspaper article about the church in Fort Dodge, Iowa, and they said the last member died, and so they've had to close the church, you know.
So what are the legislators afraid of?
This church has one member, you know. And that's one of the churches, the Christian Science churches in Iowa.
So it's really just being deferential to any kind of religious authority more than being
afraid
of the lobby.
Yes. Every Christian Science, every state has a Christian Science lobbyist, a salaried lobbyist, and he comes to the legislature and lobbies the legislators. And the Mary Baker Eddy says they should be called the Committee on Publications, but they're just one person. They're called the committee. But every state does have a full-time salaried Christian Science lobbyist, and they go down there and they just talk and talk and talk and wear the legislators out to the point that they're just not willing to do anything about this unless a child dies and there's media coverage and it seems sensational, then I think they would do it.
And there was one other thing I know that you're tracking on your website, which is the polygamous cults are dealing with a great deal of this too, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, these are the renegade reconstructionist, I guess. What is
right.
it called? The Latter-day Saints.
Right.
You say they're the true Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're seeing a great deal of abuse and some death there, too.
Yes, and so much kidnapping of, you know, underage brides and forcing them into marriages and then abandonment of the boys because the boys are surplus in a polygamous group. And so these poor little boys will just work their hearts out on construction projects, probably in violation of federal child labor laws for these groups, and then when they hit puberty, the group will find some reason to expel them.
No competition for the old men.
Yeah, yeah, it's horrible. I mean, there have been kids that have been dumped off in the desert.
And some of these they call themselves true Mormons, they also just believe in prayer for medical healing, or they just don't care?
They did up until maybe 15 years ago when they found out they could get quite a bit of money from the state for disabled children. And so now they go to doctors and get a tremendous amount in state-funded benefits. They also are just breeding disabled children because of the incest and the inbreeding within the group.
Well, thank you, Rita, for being on our show today. You have a website. What is the website address?
It is www.childrenshealthcare.org, and Children's Healthcare is all run together as one word with no punctuation.
And it's a membership group, and you'd like people to contact and help you out then?
Oh, certainly.
And your members will get a very good newsletter.
Thank
that
you
we get.
For saying that.
And you're doing such good work, and it's very brave work, and we appreciate you being with us today, Rita.
I was glad to do it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, here with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We were just on the phone with Rita Swan, Director of Child. Children's health care is a legal duty. And Rita was a member of the Christian Science sect, which does not permit medical care for illness in most cases.
And that's also true with some Pentecostal groups.
Well, there are a number of churches, and in fact, at Rita's website, childrenshealthcare.org, they have a partial list of churches whose members have let children die since 1980 because of their religious beliefs against medical care. And Dan, why don't you read the list of these churches?
Down here at the bottom, Faith Assembly, Followers of Christ, Christian Science, Church of the Firstborn, Faith Tabernacle, End Time Ministries, The Believer's Fellowship, Faith Temple Doctoral Church of Christ in God, the Church of God of the Union Assembly, Church of God Chapel, Jehovah's Witnesses, but their only objection today is to blood transfusions. Jesus through John and Judy. Christ Assembly. Christ Miracle Healing Center. Northeast Kingdom Community Church. The No Name Fellowship. And a group called The Source.
And that was Dan Barker reading that list of churches that let children die.
I do know that Assemblies of God churches, some of the individual churches have done that. I don't think it's a national policy, but some of the individual churches believe in faith healing.
So Free Thought Radio will be right back with a pagan pulpit and a song to cheer you up.
You are listening to Free Thought Radio, hosted by Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor, and produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker. We're going to play a song, Sunday Morning Blues, because those of us who like to sleep in on Sundays or prefer to worship at the altar of our pillow have all had that common experience of being woken up by church bells. Let's hear Dan Barker performing Sunday Morning Blues.
Sunday morning and I'm lying in bed. The church bells are echoing around in my head, but I won't get up, 'cause my religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. Preacher, don't you try to tell me what's best, 'cause I know that Sunday is the day of rest, and I won't get up, 'cause my religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. That makes me a mattress Methodist. I will pray to no Lord my soul to keep. What the world really needs is a good night's sleep, so I won't get up. My religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. I'm a pillow Presbyterian. If I should die before I wake, don't bury me in church, for heaven's sake. I won't rise up. My religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. Call me a quilted Quaker. What could I learn in Sunday school, when here on my pillow is the best golden rule that I won't get up? My religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. Thank you. If I get awakened by another church bell, I will tell that preacher he can go to. Well, I won't get up. My religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. My religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. My religion is to worship at the temple of the inner springs. Such a comfortable religion. Bedside Baptists. Pillow Presbyterian.
That was Dan Barker's Sunday Morning Blues from the CD Friendly Neighborhood Atheist, available from ffrf.org. And now my very versatile co-host is back with a short free thought sermon.
And now for Free Thought Radio's Pagan Pulpit, featuring the ex-Reverend Dan Barker, author of Losing Faith in Faith, From Preacher to Atheist, and co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, while we freethinkers are truly honoring the day of rest by sleeping in and by ignoring religion, millions of believers will be in their pews on April the 1st, April Fool's Day, to congratulate themselves that they are not fools. Some preachers will undoubtedly read from the 14th Psalm, which says, "The fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. The Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. They are all gone aside. They are altogether become filthy. There is none that doeth good. No, not one." So, we non-believers are not only fools, but we are wicked and filthy and corrupt. In Psalm 10, verse 4, there's a definition of the word wicked. "The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. All his thoughts are, there is no God." The American Heritage Dictionary gives this definition of the word godless. Number one, recognizing or worshiping no God. So far, so good. But godless number two, wicked, impious, immoral. Religious culture has tried to make a connection between God belief and morality, so they put Gideon Bibles in the hotel rooms where we atheists pay to inhabit, with verses that call us names. And they sit in church smugly confident that those of us who do not join them are wicked fools. But they should be careful. They may not realize that such talk is extremely dangerous. Jesus said in Matthew 5:22, "Whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." But you can't blame Christians for not biting their tongues. Jesus did the same thing himself, failing to heed his own advice. Listen to these words of the gentle Jesus in Matthew 23, verse 15. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye shall compass the sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he is made, ye make him twofold more than the child of hell than yourselves. Woe unto you, ye blind guides, which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whoever swears by the God of the temple, he is a debtor. Ye fools and blind, for whether is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold?" So Jesus sent himself to hell, according to his own warning. And just who are Christians to decide who is immoral? Listen to this quote by Gore Vidal. "The great unmentionable evil at the center of our culture is monotheism. From a barbaric Bronze Age text known as the Old Testament, three anti-human religions have evolved: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. These are sky god religions. They are patriarchal. God is the omnipotent father, hence the loathing of women for 2,000 years in those countries afflicted by the sky god and his male delegates. The sky god is jealous. He requires total obedience. Those who would reject him must be converted or killed. Totalitarianism is the only politics that can truly serve the sky god's purpose. Any movement of a liberal nature endangers his authority. One god, one king, one pope, one master in the factory, one father leader in the family. This brutal religious history is the reason that Margaret Sanger, a godless humanitarian, wrote at the top of each of her newsletters, "No gods, no masters." Wouldn't it be nice if tomorrow morning some minister were to get up into the pulpit and stand up and look out at the audience and say, "April Fools!"
And I would add, wouldn't it be nice if this minister might get up, some minister might get up and say, "It isn't nice to call people names in the name of religion." Well, that was Dan Barker. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Freethought Radio, and we have time today for a quick Freethinker's Almanac. There are so many fascinating freethinkers born at the end of March, including British evolutionary biologist, the great Richard Dawkins, author of the best-selling book, The God Delusion, whom we've interviewed on this show. Richard Dawkins was born on March 27, 1941. And here is what Richard Dawkins wrote for the Freedom From Religion Foundation after 9/11.
"My respect for the Abrahamic religions went up in the smoke and choking dust of September 11th. The last vestige of respect for the taboo disappeared as I watched the day of prayer in the Washington Cathedral, where people of mutually incompatible faiths united in homage to the very force that caused the problem in the first place, religion. It is time for people of intellect, as opposed to people of faith, to stand up and say, 'Enough!' Let our tribute to the dead be a new resolve to respect people for what they individually think, rather than respect groups for what they were collectively brought up to believe." You can read the rest of this speech in Time to Stand Up, which is written for the foundation, at our website, ffrf.org. Happy belated birthday, Richard.
Dawkins is in good company. The poet A.E. Houseman was born, also on March 26th, but in 1859. Houseman found early fame as the poet of the Shropshire Lad. He was an independent thinker who rejected religion, and one of my favorite of his poems begins, "The laws of God, the laws of man, he may keep that will and can, not I. Let God and man decree laws for themselves, but not for me. And if my ways are not as theirs, let them mind their own affairs."
March 28th was the birthday of philosopher Daniel Dennett, born in 1942, who we interviewed on this show. He's an outspoken professor from Tufts, whose newest book is Breaking the Spell. We spoke with Daniel Dennett late last year on Freethought Radio, and you can find that interview in our archives.
Today, March 31st, is the birthday of an interesting feminist freethinker. Hypatia Bradlaugh Bonner was born in 1858, the daughter of Charles Bradlaugh, who was repeatedly elected as a member of Parliament and repeatedly refused, they repeatedly refused to seat him because he was an atheist. Bradlaugh ran the National Secular Society for many years and was Britain's most active and outspoken atheist for decades. His daughter Hypatia carried on the good fight as an ardent opponent of organized religion, the death penalty. She proposed penal reform. She was a peace advocate and a feminist. She founded the Rationalist Peace Society in 1910. I think we should bring that one back. She was the namesake of the murdered pagan lecturer of Alexandria, And you may be interested to know that there is a free thought advance, not retreat, called Lake Hypatia in Alabama, where the foundation has a second free thought hall. Hypatia Bradlaugh Bonner was an author whose motto was, "Heresy makes for progress."
Today is also the birthday of best-selling novelist John Fowles, born in 1926. His books include The Collector, The Magus, The French Lieutenant's Woman. His latest book of essays, Wormholes, came out in 1998. "Being an atheist," Fowles has said, "is a matter not of moral choice, but of human obligation." That's a quote from the New York Times Book Review.
And that concludes today's show.
I'm Dan Barker with co-host Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. You can hear the show at ffrf.org, where all of our past shows are archived for podcast. You can email us at freethoughtradio@ffrf.org or phone 608-663-7291 if you want to make a comment or ask a question for this program. We'd love to hear your comments.
Thanks for listening for Free Thought Radio. To Free Thought Radio, our topic next week will be the secular presence in Congress, and our guest, secular lobbyist Lori Lipman Brown. Please tune in next Saturday at 1 p.m. to start your weekend on a free-thinking note.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Brotherhood.